Good morning. I'm Leslie Thatcher. This is the KPCW Local News Hour. Well, after his first 100 days at the helm of his new job as president and CEO of the U.S. Ski and Snowboard Association, Tiger Shaw, ready to put his personal touch on the organization. He joins me now in the studio. Good morning.
Good morning, Leslie.
So how would you describe your first 100 days?
Well, from my end, it felt like a complete whirlwind. You know, I arrived in the fall, and I was working alongside Bill Merle during the winter for about 5 months through the Olympics, and in March, we decided to make the changeover, and Bill retired, and I moved into the helm, and since then, we have been going full speed.
Yeah. So you have been doing what, kind of outside of the Park City, just trying to meet the directors, the membership?
Yeah, so we are so interconnected with, for instance, the club and the academy systems, all the grassroots of all of our sports. And during the time I was effectively the operating officer, I spent a lot of time on the road, meeting with clubs, meeting with programs, coaches, ski areas, ski resorts, snowboarding resorts, just everybody that are really our external stakeholders and partners, as well as spending a lot of time in the office. But it was a chance for me to get out on the road and find out what people are thinking and where they think we should take the organization and where we need to improve things and where we're doing things well, and just understanding just the whole thing from A to Z.
Yeah. So tell us a little bit about your background. Of course, you were a member at one time of the U.S. ski team.
I was. So I have a ski racing background. I grew up in northern Vermont in Stowe, and I raced on the U.S. ski team from 81 to 91. It was in two Olympics, Sarajevo 84 and Calgary 88. And since then, I've really kept my hand in it. I've been involved with the Board of Trustees, the fundraising arm of the USSA, since the late 80s, initially as an athlete, and then just as a volunteer participating in all of the events. And so I've followed things closely. I've had a variety of different careers. All three of my kids grew up ski racers. I've been coaching in the programs back in Vermont and New Hampshire for a long time, 10 or 12 years as a coach. And so I've kind of gone full circle, so to speak, kind of checked all the boxes, done a lot of the different, you know, filled a lot of the different roles as a parent, as a coach, as an athlete, as a businessman, and a variety of different things around the world, and ended up coming home, so to speak, back to my roots, ski racing and ski and snowboard sports, which, you know, I just love.
Yeah. So also, you do have a background in business. What, going on to get a college degree and
so,
a
yeah,
graduate
so
degree?
When I was on the ski team, I went to Dartmouth and continued to ski race for about another 5 years after going to college, and then was involved in a variety of different businesses, software, travel assistance, emergency evacuation company based in Boston, Thailand, and Pakistan in the Northeast for a number of years, which also happens to be a partner of the U.S. ski team. That company supports our athletes and coaches while they're traveling. If anything goes wrong and they need assistance while they're traveling or they need to come home, unfortunately, for surgery or for care, then that company would bring them home. So I've had my hand in a variety of different things, and it's been a fascinating time.
Well, so the last 100 days really kind of given you an opportunity to figure out what's ahead of you and a way to plan to execute what you say is reform in three areas, according to your 100-day report. We're talking about elite teams, broadening the scope of participation, and modernizing the internal business operations. Let's not start with business operations. Your predecessor, Bill Merle, had been criticized several times for his salary and bonus arrangements, which at times totaled close to $1 million a year, money that critics say would have been better spent on coaches and athletic development. Has the board of directors set up a similar pay scale for you? Or, I mean, are you setting yourself up for similar criticism?
Well, I think anytime you look at an organization, especially an elite organization like the USSA, there are lots of different ways to look at it. It's really important that we have strong leadership and very good people leading the organization. Bill did a fabulous job over 18 years. He took us from a very good ski and snowboard organization to best in the world. I mean, incredible achievements. He instituted and implemented programs, internal systems and training programs and business systems that really allowed the USSA to grow the way it had, and also build our incredible facility that we have on Kearns Boulevard, of course, the Center of Excellence down by I-40. And so he's done amazing things. And there are certainly, this was an opportunity for the USSA and our board of directors to reset everything with new leadership coming in. And so the USSA board met for a long time. There was a search committee that ended up choosing me. They certainly reevaluate everything from top to the bottom, including compensation packages, terms of employment, much of which cascades down to the employees that work for me now. And in my opinion, I think the USSA is fairly well balanced. If you look at it in terms of other NGBs, national governing bodies that are under the United States Olympic Committee around the United States, we're comparable in terms of programs. We're one of the largest under the USOC, and we are the largest winter NGB. So in many ways, we are leaders in that aspect, and we really want to grow and evolve and amplify our grassroots and our incredible foundation. You know, the bottom of our pyramid, we have thousands and thousands, well north of 30,000 athletes, coaches, officials, and that's not even including the parents. It goes way over 100,000 if you include all the parents that support all these sports that we are trying to be the very best at, while at the same time being very sensitive to the grassroots programs and programs even locally like the Youth Sports Alliance are really so important to us. So we're very multifaceted in that, yeah, we're trying to put athletes on podiums in the elite world events around the world. At the same time, the grassroots and all of the individual programs across the entire country, and many of which are here in Park City and produce a number of Olympians, as we all know. This is really an incredible microcosm right here. So we happen to have our institution, the USSA, based here in Park City. We also have incredibly strong snowboard and skiing and cross-country Nordic and jumping programs. I mean, this area is just probably the richest area and potentially the world in terms of the diversity of what it produces.
So your short answer is that you're safe from the criticism, or you will prove that, given that the success of the program, that you're worth every penny?
We'll have to see how it works out in terms of criticism. Yeah, so anybody can pick apart any organization. All of our executive compensation plans, because we file a Form 990, are all public. And we need to make sure we have very good people here, but we do think it's very much in line with the other organizations that are similar to us and corporate America, for that point, in terms of retaining the right talent here to run this organization.
So, of course, we're just coming off an Olympic year, and as you know, or at least found out, it's the hardest time of the cycle to fundraise. I mean, how difficult is it, you know, you coming into the new position with basically cutbacks?
Yeah, it's always very tricky post-Olympic year. One of the things we've tried to do is to stagger our sponsorship agreement so that we don't have every company renewing their sponsorship agreement right after in the spring of an Olympic year. That's been a difficult thing for USSA over the years. We've been able to stagger them, and then we're also augmented by the fact that, for instance, the Alpine World Championships are in Vail next winter. So on the Alpine side, which is certainly not everything USSA does, but it's a big chunk of what USSA does, that helps us a lot, and that a lot of sponsors have gone at least through next year. Many of them have already renewed and are going through 18, and many of them through 19 because of the World Championships that are recently awarded to the Park City area, to the three ski areas here, which we're very excited about, the Freestyle and Snowboard World Championships in 2019. So, yes, a post-Olympic year is always difficult. There's a number of things that change in the organization every year. Attrition can be a problem because people are really sticking it out for 4 years, and they have other opportunities they want to pursue. In some ways, we're a launching pad for some positions, and in other ways, we're a very, very good place to work for decades. But it is always a tricky time, and we have needed to cut back to a certain degree, but that's also in the wake of a major Olympic season where we tend to really just make sure we put enough program in all the programs to maximize our medal chances.
Yeah, you already are reporting, though, a $360,000 deficiency for the year. So where are you going to make up the cuts for that? Or
exactly.
You've got Tricia Worthington to make it up.
That's right. Well, Trish Worthington has joined our team, which we're very excited about. And we have a tremendous family of donors that are on our board of trustees, as well as a number of people who are involved in our programs. And we are very fortunate to have such a strong support base. This season, there are a number of things, a couple of sponsors we were hoping to close that didn't end up happening before the Olympics. And frankly, right before the Olympics, we invested some money in training camps to make sure our athletes were prepared. There were some pause and times before the Olympics where we decided to have a camp versus send everybody home prior to the Olympics. We think it paid off, but it certainly was an investment. And in the end, the season, we're projecting around a $350,000 deficit. That means we need to run a surplus for the next couple of years. No nonprofit really wants to plan deficit spending, and we're certainly not in that position either. We're very strong financially, but we do need to run a surplus in the years coming.
So you're going to run it and then just hope to make it up in the next couple of years then?
Well, since our fiscal year closed on April 30th, since that's in the books, so to speak, there's not much we can change there, but we have been very careful and in our budgeting and our spending plans for next season to make sure that we stay in the black next year, yes.
All right. Well, we saw, of course, some great success at this year's Olympics, as well as at the World Cup, the Grand Prix, the X Game levels. At the same time, you know, we point out that head alpine coach Sasha Rierich saying that the team has fallen off the mark in the technical disciplines for alpine racing, GS, and slalom. So these aren't really the building blocks of ski racing, no?
Exactly. The strength of our pipeline is fundamental to our future success. What Sasha was referring to is we have metrics by which we measure our pipelines, and there's a couple of different ways we can do that. We measure the number of athletes we have world-ranked, top 20, top 30, top 40, all the way up to top 100. We also measure the number of athletes that we think are capable of being top three in a world-class event, a World Cup in the case of Alpine, and we call them podium potential athletes. So it's much like Las Vegas odds in horse racing. So how many athletes do we have that have a pretty decent odd of winning or placing, so to speak? We need to build that and improve that. And in the technical disciplines, we don't have as much depth as we would like to have. And Sasha was making that remark publicly, which is quite true. At the same time, we have some incredibly talented athletes. So we have a two-pronged approach to improving that. One is we're going to make the very best with the great athletes we have now, whether or not we have a deep pipeline. We can't change that at the moment, but we can improve with what we have. And this is where the grassroots parts come in and where we are partnering with our community, our stakeholders, our clubs, academies, and we're going to work very closely with them to make sure we understand the very best way to get the very best kids to the elite level that want to be at the elite level, because it's that pipeline and stemming any attrition there and making it an attractive pathway for them, which is also one of the reasons why we're building and improving all the programs we have, athletic as well as non-athletic. So career opportunities, academic opportunities if you're in high school, college, and really mentoring the athlete throughout their entire tenure with the U.S. ski and snowboard teams so that, you know, when they win medals or if they don't win medals, they've got all kinds of other options in their life.
Yeah, certainly, though, it's a rich kids sport, you know? I mean, it just... There may be a whole nother layer of great athletic talent out there we'll just never know about.
You know, I would rather phrase it that these are expensive sports. What we would like to do is make sure that they aren't just rich kid sports. So there are many, if you look at the background of many of our top athletes, they tend to come from the ski area towns. Their parents are ski patrol, ski instructors, work in the administration, coaches. They work locally. And they're right, they are not generally rich families. But their kids are very rich in their opportunity to be exposed to skiing and riding on these amazing mountains. And again, Park City is a good example of this. The town I'm from, Stowe, Vermont, is an example of that. Yes, you have plenty of wealthy families, but you have some that aren't. Also, the key thing is that when it becomes expensive because you're becoming an elite athlete, that we have the funding in place that we can support them so that when you get to a world-class level, it's not expensive. And that's a key thing that we need to accomplish. We don't have as much money as we would like to have to support all the athletes to the level we would like to support them. And that's something we're going to work very, very hard on in the coming years. And hopefully we can sit here in 2 or 3 or 4 years from now, potentially post PyeongChang in 2018, and we can reflect back on how we were able to support so many athletes that we are able to do well in PyeongChang and that it wasn't expensive then for them to participate in the elite level.
Also, one of your goals is to broaden the scope of participation. In other words, getting everybody from the top staff to the athletes to the volunteers to get behind this best in the world vision. So that was something that Marold and his team had come through, but it's something that you're embracing and moving forward with?
Yes, absolutely. I mean, it's a whole ecosystem. So we actually like to think of it as a double peak pyramid. So there's a large base in the pyramid. So anybody entering a skiing or snowboarding sport is a participant. And then if they get involved in competition and they get involved with a club or an organization where they can start competing, they find a coach, they have success, they enjoy it. And then at some point, they really decide whether or not they're in the elite pipeline. And eventually they get up to us, and then we field those elite teams. But at the same time, our organization is the governing body of these sports in the United States, and we care very much that the kids that love to compete but aren't necessarily going to make it to the Olympics have lots of venues, lots of competition, not terribly expensive programs to go into, that they don't have to fly around the country to compete in the events they want to compete. And those are the things that we're grappling with, is how to make it very affordable and very inclusive for everybody. And that's something that I think is one of the major charges toward, you know, of the USSA by the USOC, is to be able to accomplish all those things.
All right. Anybody to look forward to this upcoming World Cup season?
Well, I think if you look towards all our superstars that performed in Sochi this year, and some of the young ones and a few that didn't do as well as we had hoped they would have, or they might have hoped they would have, but all you have to do is come down to our facility and watch them work out this summer and how hard they're working at it. And I think we're going to have a lot of success this year. And so fingers crossed, you know, next Olympics they're 4 years away. But there's an awful lot that goes on in between, and we intend to do really well at that.
Okay. Hey, Tiger, thanks for spending some time with us.
Thank you very much.